Okay, we are on a Pesach topic. I'm really like I'm in shock that people are actually.
I needed to sit for an hour.
I gave a related shiur to a group this morning, and I told them, like, you don't really want to know this for your Seder, because this is about Hallel. And it's about Hallel. At that point in the Seder, there are very few people who are going to be happy when you say, I have something to say about this.
Yeah.
I have a nice piece on Kaddish. I think I did it a couple of years ago here. Not here, but
in my house.
We talked about, yeah, that would be funny. No, Rav Cook has a very nice point about Kaddish, where he talks about Kaddish as a declaration, because it is. You know, and so it's not simply that you're making Kiddush, but you are declaring Kadesh, let us sanctify. And in a characteristically Rav Cook way. Okay, that's it. You got your standard right, Torah. I thought we'd talk a little bit about Hallel. And there's a lot to be said about Hallel, but I picked one perek in particular, which I think has something interesting to teach us regarding Yetzias Mitzrayim and broader themes in terms of the Jewish history. This Shabbos I'm going to be doing the Ivrit Shir, so if anybody goes there at the Bayit, then you will hear an hour's worth of more stuff about Hallel, because I intend to use this there too. This is recycling. But
I could go to the Ivrit Shir and say I understood it.
Yeah. First in English.
And that will be broader. There's going to be a lot more developed there. In any case, if you take a look at source number one on your sheet, this is Tehillim Kufyud Dalet, the second of the prakim that we use in Tehillim and in Hallel, and arguably where Hallel really begins. Because the Gemara in Pesachim on Daf Kufyud Ches on 118 talks about why we say Hallel altogether, and why we have the Hallel that we have, because really, as they put it there, it will be enough for us to say the paragraph of Tehillim that goes Hodu Lashem Ki Tov Ki Olam Chasdo with the 26 Ki Li Olam Chasdo lines, which go a lot faster, by the way, if you do what I once saw a kid do, which is you go down the right column first and then you go down the left column. That makes it go a lot faster. But that, as the Gemara calls it, is Hallel Hagadol. That's the
just
great.
Just say Ki Li Olam Chasdo really loud, and then you have to say it.
Right, but now you said the words. It also works for Yatsib Piskam, and you go rin down the left side. But anyway, totally lost where I was going with that. The Gemara in Pesachim tells us Hallel Hagadol really should be sufficient, and you don't need all of this Hallel that we do. And the Gemara gives an explanation for why Hallel is as it is, and it gives us five different themes that we look for in Hallel. And the first of the themes is the theme of Yetzias Mitzrayim, which raises the question, because the first paragraph of Hallel says nothing about Yetzias Mitzrayim at all. And so what's the first paragraph of Hallel doing there? And that was actually the shiur I gave this morning, which, you know, you can hear the Ivrit shiur on Shabbos. But I wanted to look now at the second of the prakim of Hallel, the Betzeis Yisrael, bless you, which is where we actually get into Yetzias Mitzrayim. Take a look, please, on your sheet at source number one, where we begin, Betzeis Yisrael Mitzrayim Beis Yaakov Me'am Lo Eiz, when Israel left Egypt, Yaakov's house from a nation of foreign tongue, Haisa Yehuda Lekadsho, Yisrael Mamshalosav. So Yehuda, Judah, was his sanctuary, Israel his domain. Israel here is used not in the context of the land of Israel. Israel here is the Jewish people. So right off the bat, I don't know what to do with these first two psukim. And that's really the bulk of what we're going to talk about, is what to do with the first two psukim. Because there's an awful lot here that's strange. What jumps out at you when you read these two sentences?
What is Jacob's house for a nation of foreign tongue? What does it even mean?
Well,
Jacob's house wasn't in Egypt.
Well, it was.
He was from a nation of foreign. Well,
it was. I mean, Yaakov's house means his family, right? They're actually identified that way when they go down to Egypt. They're called Beis Yaakov. Mm-hmm. But within this sentence, there are a couple of things that strike me as strange. One is the insistence on Yaakov versus Yisrael. And then in the second sentence, we're going to get Yehuda thrown in as well.
But it's used all three. Mm-hmm.
Yep. So what's that? Right. What else is strange here? Sort of thing, you can say this like every Yom Tov and every Rosh Chodesh and completely miss it. But when you stop and look at the sentence, it sort of begs explanation. If you were trying to describe Mitzrayim, what would you say to describe Mitzrayim? What's used in the Torah to describe Mitzrayim?
You wouldn't say my Eloise, that's for sure.
Right. What would you say? I mean, you would say Beis Avadim, right? Like Hashem says, in fact, in the Aseret HaDibros, I took you out of Mitzrayim, Beis Avadim, place of slaves. You could talk about the people who were cruel. You could talk about any number of things, really, with Mitzrayim. Why are we characterizing them as Amloes? Amloes means a people who speak a foreign tongue. They speak a language you don't understand. That was the worst aspect of our experience in Egypt. That we spent 210 years not knowing which way to go to get to whatever it was.
But can language be used as a... Like they have a whole different way of thinking... Different concept from the way
different culture.
Right, then why put it in terms of language? I understand the idea, and we're going to talk about the foreignness aspect of it. But it just seems awfully strange.
Because that's one of the things that the Bnei Israel kept was their language.
So that's something we have to come to, right? The Medrash that says the Jews stuck to their language, and where the Medrash gets that idea from. But that's certainly one possibility. Is that we're highlighting the fact that we didn't speak their language. It's just a very jarring thing to suddenly that's I'm praising God for taking me out of a place where I didn't speak the language.
Maybe it just connotes an overall that you're a stranger, you don't understand the language, you don't have the same customs, you're not treated the same because of it. Mm-hmm. So it could have that overreaching implication.
Right. So the foreignness is definitely a possibility. The Das Mikra in its edition of Tehillim points you to source number 2, which comes from the Tochacha, the warning of punishments that Hashem gives the Jews in Parshas Kisavo, in which he says, Yisa Hashem alacha goy merachok mikitzei haaretz kasher yid'eh hanasher. God is going to bring upon you a nation from afar, from the ends of the earth, kasher yid'eh hanasher. Where the nesher flies, and nesher I translated as vulture. I think we've talked about that on other occasions. Although I did notice just a couple of weeks ago, I had a chance to use a Sansino Chumash, and actually it was the week of Parsha Shmini, so I noticed that for nesher in Shmini, which is the Kashrus section, they translate nesher as vulture. So I flipped over to Parshas Yisro, where we're told Hashem is going to bring us out on wings of Nisharim, and there they translate as eagle. Mm-hmm. They're just going to bring themselves to say it, wings of vultures. But in any case, the pasuk says Hashem is going to bring a nation against us from the end of the earth where the vulture flies, Goy Asher lo tishma leshono, a nation whose tongue you will not have heard, Goy az panim, a bold-faced nation, asher lo yisaf panim lezakein v'nahar lo yachon, which will show favor to neither the old nor the young. So here, we emphasize a nation whose tongue you will not have heard, and the broader context for describing this nation is that they are what?
Very cruel.
Right. That they are brazen, that they are cruel. The idea of foreignness is mercilessness. That they view you as the other, and that permits them to do whatever they're going to do. For anyone here who's ever read Orson Scott Card, he had that series, the Ender's Game series, they made a movie out of the first volume. So one of the books he talks about, I think it's Xenocide, he talks about the idea that when you view someone as being entirely foreign, you have no means of communication, and that helps you then to do whatever you want to do to them, because they're not like me, they're completely different. I don't recommend the series, though. Having said that, the message that Mikra sees here is that they are foreign and therefore they are merciless.
Why therefore? Don't say.
Well, it's something that permits them to be merciless. Because you don't speak their language, there's no relationship. So that's one possibility. Ibn Ezra suggests a slightly different meaning for the word lo'ez. He connects it to the word laz, which is often used to mean foreign speech. However, in Gemara speak, laz has a different meaning. And you see it here in source number 3. He says, lo'ez midivrei razal kemo laz albaneha o liloazot, which I translated here, that in the words of the sages, lo'ez is like, quote, producing slander upon her children or speakers of foreign tongues. And what it's talking about is laz as negative speech, saying something bad about somebody. The case in particular, they're talking about to be motzi laz on somebody as calling into question the lineage of their children, is the context of lo'ez laz albanel in source number 3. The point is that lo'ez, Egypt is an am lo'ez, in the sense not that they spoke a different language, but that they spoke a foul language that was used against us. What does that fit in terms of the story of Mitzrayim? Think back to the beginning of the slavery.
Oh, is it
done?
They're going to rise up against us.
Exactly. When they said, Havan is hakmalo, we will be wise against them, right? The Egyptians said, Penir beva yaki sikrana milchama veno saf gamhu al sonenu, that war is going to break out, and then the Jews are going to join their enemies, the enemies of the Egyptians, and they're going to fight against us. So Egypt from the start said things against the Jews. That's how they rallied people against them. It also fits when we say, and here's another Haggadah Dvar Torah Tikei. When the Pasuk says, Vayareyu Osanu Hamitzrim, right? So usually we translate it as, they did bad things to us. But I believe it's Chasam Sofer who says, Vayareyu Osanu, they made us out to be Ra. They said that we were Ra. And that's the way that they convince everybody to fight against us. That fits with Ibn Ezra on Lo'ez. So there, you can actually, during the Magid, tell people of Dvar Torah and say, and just wait, I'm going to have more to say when we get to Halakha.
And no one will be awake by then, so you're safe.
And at that point, you tell them, yeah, I went on for half an hour, where were you? Okay. But I think there's a third approach here, and you sort of hinted at it when comments were made about the Loshinu as Loshonim, that they didn't change their language. I think this is also about assimilation in Egypt. And the idea is that Yisrael leaves Mitzrayim. Yisrael is our ethnic identity. Beis Yaakov is that which is holy. The house of Yaakov leaves the Am Lo'ez. And I want to unpack that and explain what I mean. Yaakov is identified by his speech in the Torah. Where do we see that? Hakol kol Yaakov v'hayadayim d'ei Esav. Oh, I brought it on the sheet, so it's number 4. Sorry. So that's one example of it. The voice is the voice of Yaakov. That's one. Where else? No cheating. I'm looking at source number 5. Disqualified. When Yaakov and Lavan make their covenant with each other, they set up a pile of stones, and Yaakov calls it, Lavan calls it Yigar Sahadusa, and Yaakov calls it Galeed. And the Torah takes time to tell us, Lavan calls it this, and Yaakov calls it that. Why does the Torah do that? I mean, they set up a pile of stones and move on. Or say, they set up a pile of stones and they called it Galeed. Or they call it Yigar Sahadusa. What is the Torah doing telling us, Lavan called it this and Yaakov called it that? So on one level, on a simple pshat level, it could be that historically there was a time when people in that region, some of them called it Yigar Sahadusa and some people called it Galeed, and therefore the Torah is telling you, yeah, this is where it came from. Because Lavan spoke Aramaic, and therefore he used this language, and Yaakov spoke Hebrew, and therefore he spoke that language. Leave aside the historical question about the development of Aramaic as a fun topic for another time. But that's one way to look at it. Another way to look at it, though, is that the Torah is highlighting the difference between Yaakov and Lavan. Yaakov speaks Hebrew. there's another person in Chumash who is identified for his speech. He's also from Sefer Bereishis, but it's not in Sefer Bereishis that you find his speech really highlighted. So that's tricky.
Is it Moshe? I don't know
for
his speech.
Lack of, until he becomes the most prolific speaker in the entire Torah. Right? All the times that he actually speaks. That's always the big irony with Moshe, is he says, Lo ish devarim anochi in the beginning, and then Ela had devarim, and he gives a 5-week long speech before he passes away. We call that Sefer Devarim. But yes, it's true. Moshe is identified, certainly as having unique speech and potentially problematic speech. But I'm thinking Yosef. Did I bring it? Yeah, I did. Take a look at source number 6. Edus b'Yosef samo b'tzeiso al eretz Mitzrayim sefas lo yadati eshma. Right? The key point there is you can read that pasuk in two different ways, which is why I have the slash in the middle of whether he there is God or whether it's Yosef. But the association with Yosef, of Yosef going out through Egypt and hearing a language that he doesn't know and then coming to understand it, and the Medrash explains that Hashem teaches Yosef this language, and this whole story with Paro not knowing the languages, which is a separate piece. But there's this idea of Yosef not knowing the language in Mitzrayim, and then more strongly, the idea that was already quoted before, that we never changed our language in Egypt, that comes from Yosef. Take a look, please, at source number 7. This is the source for that idea that the Jews did not change their speech. Medrash in the Mechilta to Sefer Shmos, Uminayin Shaloshanu Eslish Shaloshinu Eslishonam. How do we know that the Jews did not change their tongue, right? We have these three things that we say. They didn't change their clothing, they didn't change their tongue, and they didn't change their names. So each one needs to be sourced. You need psukim for that. So how do we know that the Jews did not change their language? Shenemar, well, they quoted from Yosef. Kifi hamedaber aleichem. That's when Yosef talks to his brothers and says, you know that it's really me. I am speaking with my mouth, which the Medrash understands to mean, I'm speaking your language, the language that we all had as kids. The Omer, and then the Medrash fast forwards to the Jews in Mitzrayim, and specifically Moshe, and talking to Paro, Vayomru, then Moshe and Aaron said to Paro, Elokei ha'ivrim nikra aleinu, the God of the Hebrews has appeared to us. So what? The key is the word ivrim. As the Medrash continues to say, Vayomer, the Omer Vayavah, Halid Ve'agela Avram HaIvri, that Avram is identified as the Ivri. Avram is the Hebrew. Now, once you mention that the Hebrew is meant to mean more than just a geographic location, that they are by Eber Hanahar, the side of the river, you realize also that Yosef has that association, because Yosef is identified in Egypt as Ivri. Right? Like the butler says, Bisham Itanu Nar Ivri. This Ivri was with us in jail. So Yosef preserves his speech and says, I will be identified as an Ivri. And that is passed down to the Jews. And we have this pasuk in Tehillim. Yaakov and Yosef are identified by their speech. And what's particularly interesting to me about that is that Yaakov and Yosef are unique among these original leaders of the Jewish people in their experience. Yaakov and Yosef, this is a little vague as a question, so I don't blame you if you have no idea what I'm looking for here, but I'm going to ask the question anyway. Yaakov and Yosef have a fundamentally different life experience than Avram and Yitzchak do. What would you say is...
You mean the tent?
They both left the home.
Right. I mean, Avram leaves home. But then he establishes the Jewish home. Exactly. Right. And even though he deals with others, it's sort of on the fence. Ger v'toshav. Right. It's ger v'toshav. I'm a stranger, but I'm also a citizen. I'm here. I'm not here. Avram is kind of mixed in that sense. Yitzchak is entirely at home. Never leaves the land and so on. And when he does, he has problems. The incidents in Gerar with the Plishtim. Yaakov is out everywhere, right? From the time that he is chased out of the home by Esav And first of all, you have his trouble with Esav even when he is at home. But then he's out and he's involved with Laban, and he gets back and he has trouble with Shem, and he has trouble with Esav, and so on. This whole series of problems that Yaakov has and somehow manages to triumph over, he's immersed among the nations. And he dies, ultimately, in Mitzrayim. And who more so than Yosef, who becomes entirely immersed among the nations. He takes on the name Zafnas Paneach, he saves Egypt, he lives out his life in Egypt, really from the age of 17. He never gets back home, not until after he's already passed away. So Yaakov and Yosef are the ones among our ancestors who are most immersed among the nations, and they are the ones who are identified by their speech as having preserve this Ivri identity. The Jews in Egypt are identified by their speech as well. We saw the Medrash about Lo Shinu Es Lashonam. They didn't change their speech, but it really goes all the way back to Yosef's brothers. When they come down to Paro, right, and they meet with Yosef, we're told that Yosef doesn't, or they think Yosef doesn't understand what they're saying, Ki hamelitz beinosam, because there is an interpreter between them. Why is there an interpreter? Because we're speaking our language. We're not talking with the Egyptian tongue. We're going to speak our tongue. There's a separation there. We move ahead further. If you take a look at source number 9, I brought you from Daniel, in which when Daniel and his friends are first taken captive by the Babylonians, it's the Hebrews at the bottom of one side, the English is at the top of the second side, the mission of those who take them into the palace is Lahavi mi bnei Yisrael umizera hamulucha umin hapartimim, to bring from the children of Israel, from the seed of the throne, the royal seed, min hapartimim, from the officers, yiladim asher ein bahem kol mum, kids who have no blemish, v'tovei mareh, of good appearance, umaskilim b'chol chochma v'yodei das, they have to be really bright, m'vinei mada, v'asher koach b'em lamod b'echal hamelech, with the strength to stand in the king's palace. And what are they supposed to do with these kids? Ulalamdam sefer ulishon kasdim, to teach them the script and language of the Chaldeans, in order to assimilate them. And then we go on with the attempt to give them the king's food. We saw this when we talked about the Daniel, Yosef, and Esther before Purim. The point is that the idea of the learning the local language is very much one of assimilation. It's very much about becoming part of the society. And perhaps the idea here is, and what we're emphasizing when we say in this pasuk, Beis Yaakov me'am lo'ez, is the reason we were able to get out was because we saw them as an am lo'ez. Because we never became Egyptian. Now, frankly, the Egyptians helped in that regard, right, by enslaving us. Yeah, it's not as though the welcome mat was out. Except that the only reason the slavery happens is because they see us as foreign in the first place. You know, as we say, we're not going to live among you, we're going to live in Goshen. Right? Our diets are different as established by Yosef with his brothers. So we make the statement, oh, we are going to be apart, and they take us at our word, and they proceed with the plan of enslavement. But that perhaps is why we get out, because we've identified as a separate nation with a separate identity. That's emphasized in the second pasuk of this parak in Tehillim, in which it says, "Haisa Yehuda lekadsho, Yisrael mamshalosav." So Yehuda became his sanctuary, his kodesh, God's kodesh. Yisrael became his memshala, became God's domain. So Radak says that the kedusha is divine holiness, memshala is divine control. Why Yehuda? What's unique about Yehuda?
He took responsibility for Yosef.
He took responsibility for Yosef, okay.
And the lineage of the family as well, no?
In terms of Tamar.
Right.
The incident with Tamar could be. Take a look at source number 10, please. A classic Gemara that you've probably only heard half of, because, oddly enough, no one quotes the first half. Haya Rabbi Meir Omer. Rabbi Meir used to say, "Kishamdu Yisrael al Hayam Hayushvatim Menatzchim Zem Ze." When Israel stood at the sea, the tribes were contesting with each other. Ze Omer Ani Yoreitchil Layam. This one said, "I'm going to go into the sea first." Ze Omer Ani Yoreitchil Layam. And this one said, "No, I'm going to go to the sea first." Kafas Shivto Shal Binyamin VeYor Aliyam. Chila Binyamin said, "We are going to go in first." Right? Does this sound familiar at all?
Yeah.
That they're fighting with each other. I want to go first. I want to go first.
No.
I don't mean familiar from when the kids are supposed to go somewhere. I mean like the Jews at the sea. That the tribes are saying, "I want to go first." That's not the version I grew up hearing. I grew up hearing that no one wanted to go in first, and Nachshon jumps in first. But the first half of the Gemara is actually that that each one says, "I'm going to go first," and it's Binyamin that goes in, and or wants to go in. And they give you a pasuk to support this, and then they say, "Vahayu sarei Yehuda rog mim osam." The officers of Yehuda, the leaders of Shevet Yehuda, threw stones at Binyamin, saying, "You're not going in first." And they continue with the pasuk to support it. Lefichach zacha Binyamin hatzadik v'nase ushpizchan legevura. And therefore, Binyamin ended up being the host for the mighty, meaning that the Beis Hamikdash is built in Yehuda's land, but inside of Binyamin's territory. There's a section that is Binyamin's, and there's a section that belongs to Yehuda, according to one view in the Gemara. There are two views in the Gemara. That's one view. The other view says that it's actually no man's land. It doesn't belong to any Shevet. But this is taking the view that Binyamin owns part of the area of the Beis HaMikdash because they were ready to go in first. It's a rather different view of what happened at the sea from what I heard growing up. The second view is the one that I've heard more classically. Amar lo Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says to him, to Rabbi Meir, "Lo kach haya maisa." That was not what happened. And Ella zelmer einani yoreit chil layam, zelmer einani yoreit chil layam. Each one said, "I'm not going in. You go first." Kavaz Nachshon ben Aminadav yoreliam chila. Nachshon ben Aminadav jumped into the sea first. Shneamer, and they quote a pasuk to support it. And lefichach zacha Yehuda lasos memshala beYisrael, and therefore Yehuda merited to have power over Israel. Shneamer, and they quote a pasuk to support it. Ma tam haisa Yehuda lekadsho v'Yisrael mamshelo sav. Why is it that Yehuda got his sanctuary? Why is that Israel became his, lowercase h, Yehuda's domain? Mishum dehayam ra'avaya. No, it's because the sea fled before Yehuda. So that is this way of looking at it. And there are all sorts of psukim that support this story, but the point for our purposes is that Yehuda is singled out here because it is in his they gain authority because of the first part of the pasuk, because, or the next pasuk I should say, because Hayamra Avayanos, because the sea saw and fled. Yehuda is unique, Yehuda is special, they enter the sea first. Now, that doesn't quite explain why Yehuda would be specified here. In other words, Haisa Yehuda lekadsho Yisrael mamshalosav doesn't quite explain why Yehuda should be singled out when the entire nation became Hashem's memshalah, unless I'm going to say that it's really about Yehuda getting power over everybody. So Ibn Ezra, Radak, suggests that Yehuda here really signifies the nation. It means the whole nation. Another approach in source number 11 notes that it's Yehuda and his tshuva after what happened with Tamar when he came out and declared that Tamar was pregnant from him. And that's source number 11. It's another idea. But in any case, this parak, which we say so quickly and don't necessarily realize what we're saying, is talking about the Jews leaving Mitzrayim in the merit of the fact that they saw the Egyptians as the Amloes, as the nation that speaks a foreign tongue. Yehuda, for leaping into the sea, certainly within the second half of that Gemara in Sota, ends up becoming the Kodesh of Hashem, and maybe is singled out because he is the leader or because of of what happened with Tamar. But we continue now. Hayamra avayanos, hayardein yisov leachor. The sea saw and fled. The Yardain turned back. When did that happen?
Oh, with Joshua, when they crossed the Yarden.
Right. Yeah. You were going to say? Well, that's the yam. That's not the yarya. So we do manage to get a little bit of Yehoshua into this. The yam is when they leave Mitzrayim, and the Yarden presumably is when they enter into Israel, although Rashi here disagrees and says, no, what it's suggesting is the idea you've probably heard in the Medrash that suggests that all the water split when the Yam Suf split, so the Yarden actually splits as well. There's an advantage to giving that explanation that Rashi gives. He's not just making that up, so to speak. Because the Pasuk says, the Yarden yisov le'achor, which literally means it turned back. But as we read Yehoshua, we will find that that's not what happens for the Yarden. The Yarden is a river, as opposed to a sea. And so what actually happens, I'm pulling the ending here, is that that the water simply stops here, and then the rest of the water flows downstream, so that now there's land for them to walk through. So it doesn't turn back like a Yam Suf style split. So therefore it makes sense for Rashi to say this is actually a separate event. It's not talking about when the Jews enter. The next pasuk, Haharim rakdu cha'elim giva'os kivnei tzon. The mountains danced. Right? The mountains danced like Elim. Elim I translated here as rams. Yeah, because I guess if it was the Ayal, it would be Ayalot. That's probably why I did that. Okay. The mountains dance like rams, givaos kivnei tzon, and the hills like young sheep. Okay, when did that happen?
Of the Sinai?
So the Gemara in Pesachim says that it happens at Matan Torah, when the Torah is given. Okay. Malacha hayam kisanus, we now ask a question. Why is it that the sea flees? Hayarden tisov la'achor. Why is it that the Yarden turns back? Heharim tirgudu cha'elim gevaos kivnei tzon. That the mountains dance like rams, the hills dance like sheep. What is the reason for it? Milifnei adon chuli aras milifnei eloka Yaakov. From in front of God, chuli aras, who forms the land from before the God of Yaakov. That's why. Because God is the creator of the earth, Chuli Aretz, as well as our God, Eloka Yaakov. Ha'ofechi Atzura Gamayim, who turns the rock into a reservoir of water. Chalamish Lamayno Mayim, the flint into a fountain of water. Chuli is to form, according to Rashi. The Chuli Aretz, the former of the land, is like the word Mecholel. Others give other explanations. But what is the significance here of turning stone into water? Kalamish lamayno mayim. It's an important point, I think, in understanding the parak. I don't think it's a random metaphor.
Well, it's something that's very difficult to do.
There are a lot of things that are
difficult.
Normally
it takes a long time. Yeah,
maybe to Moshe.
And
right, bringing water from a stone. Moshe brings water from the rock. Good. What else?
Isn't it something the Torah is often called up as water?
True.
I've got something mixed up here.
Right. Radak suggests it's a reversal of what you saw earlier in the parak. Just like God dries up the water in the Yarden Yam Suf. So too, he could bring water from a stone, which is good. Ibn Ezra offers another suggestion. If you take a look at source number 12, Kihu yavash mehayam v'hayardein v'hamayim lachim. He dried up the waters of the sea. He dried up the Jordan. He dried up the liquid water. V'hotzi nechalim shem lachim misela shu yavesh. And on the other end, he brought liquid streams from the dry stone, as he said when the Jews were in the Midbar. V'hine hatam. But he says the meaning is, because only God can make something and its opposite. And I added in what I think he means is not just creating the thing and its opposite, which is its own feet, but also making them coexist. Think like Barat, right? The fire and ice. V'ine hayam v'hayardein v'atsurim b'ka'am v'hafach tol dosam. He reversed the nature of the spli and the sea. Reversed the nature of the sea and the Jordan and the stones. That which is wet becomes dry, that which is dry becomes wet. So that, I think, is an important point, but I think there's something else going on here. Because if I were to read this parak with what we've said so far, I would split the parak at a certain point into two separate themes. The first theme I would have put in the opening two psukim. When the Jews left Egypt, this nation of the foreign tongue, the Jews became Hashem's province. They became Hashem's special special property. End of thought number one. Right? Because it doesn't talk about that again afterwards. The Jews don't show up in the rest of the parak, do they? Except in Elokai Yaakov and Pasuk Zion. So I would have said, Pasuk Aleph, Pasuk Bet is one thought, and then Gimel through Ches is a second thought. And what's the theme of the second thought?
Hashem's abilities.
Yeah, divine might. Look at what God can do. But I don't think that's the way we're supposed to take this. Because I think that bringing in Yaakov in Pasuk Zion is the tip-off that this isn't two separate themes joined together in a perek, but rather it's the same theme across both. In the first part, we talked about the Jews leaving Mitzrayim, the house of Yaakov leaving this nation that has a foreign language. Essentially, this is bringing water from a stone. Right? God is taking something that was inside something else and is giving it a unique and separate identity. If you take a look at source number 13, you find a key pasuk that supports this idea. O Hanisa Elokim, Lavo Lakachas Lo Goy Mikerev Goy. This is when Moshe is saying to the Jews, can you believe all the things that God did for us? And he says, has it ever happened that God performed such a miracle to take a nation from amid a nation? It's unheard of. The idea that somehow they're going to have a separate identity and they're going to come out and be their own people. That doesn't happen. It's not within the natural order. This is something incredible that God did. And what I'm suggesting is the bridge between the first half and the second half is the reason why God is able to do this. And God's able to do anything. But the reason why God does this is because we are recognized as a goy within a goy. We are recognized as a separate population because we don't become like them. The water doesn't become the stone because we recognize that they are an amloes. You follow? Mm-hmm. That I think is what's going on here in this parak, is the idea that this is a message to the Jews. The reason you got out is because it was Beis Yaakov Me Amloes. Had you become like them, you wouldn't have made it out of Mitzrayim. That I think is what's going on there. Now, that still leaves me with some time to play with. So, two choices. One is to go into the first parak in Hallel and say something about that. The other thought is that to say something completely different about Pesach, which is an idea that I'm just developing now, that I'd be glad to talk through here, and it'll help me develop it further, and then I'll have something to put into my weekly email for the Beit Midrash tonight, so that'll be very convenient.
We'd love to be a part of
that. Okay. Then let's try out this. So let's make sure you read the email. A second idea then. Someone asked me a question yesterday regarding the Karban Pesach. They were very impressed. Isn't quite the word, but they were surprised by the way that there's an emphasis, or appears to be an emphasis, on